Across the ASEAN, only on Money FM 89.3.
When we talk about startups, especially in the tech industry, there are two important things to consider. One, how will you find financing for your burgeoning and hopefully fast-growing startup? And two, what might be your exit strategies to make sure you can cash out and perhaps realize returns for your investors? And that applies also for the many tech and startups in Southeast Asia and the growing number, slowly growing number of unicorns here. However, COVID-19 has impacted the landscape and the ability for tech startups here to both fund their operations and perhaps look for exits. This at least according to the most recent Southeast Asia Exit Landscape Report 2.0, authored by Golden Gates Ventures in association with INSEAD. And today on the line and across the ASEAN, we're joined by Mr. Michael Lintz, the partner, one of the partners at Golden Gate Ventures, to talk to us about what are some of the findings of their recent study and whether or not it has impacted and also to talk about how COVID-19 has impacted and changed the landscape for some of the biggest tech startups across the ASEAN. Mr. Lintz, thank you so much for joining us today. Glad to hear you and your loved ones are still safe and in good health during these uncertain times. And we welcome you to the show. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon, and thanks for having me.
All right, so let's get to it, Mr. Lintz. This is a very extensive report, an interesting one, actually, surveying the landscape for Southeast Asia's tech space. And of course, this is across the ASEAN. I do want to ask you, based on the findings, how has COVID-19 impacted the landscape of Southeast Asia's tech and startup industry, particularly in terms of those two facets, funding and exits?
Well, I would say that if you look at technology globally in 2020, it has been surprisingly robust, or maybe even unsurprisingly. We saw that because people were stuck at home, we had to go to home learning, we had to buy our groceries online. A lot of these companies that were tech enablers over the past few years saw phenomenal growth initially. But we've seen a few trends though on the funding side. Companies specifically that were more later stage, companies that existed over a number of 5, 6, 7, or 8 years, were actually able to raise funding relatively easy. They filled up a track record. They built up a good name with investors. The funny thing is that because we were limited in terms of our traveling and even meeting new startup founders, that on the early stage side, the seed investments, those initially slowed down. I think towards the end of 2020, when it showed that, unfortunately, COVID was here to stay for a bit longer, people quickly shifted towards, okay, this is going to be our new normal, and what we want to do is continue investing. So towards the end of 2020, you kind of see the investment pace pick up again. But the one thing that has definitely slowed down initially was the number of exits. I think in the first half of 2020, a lot of companies were just considering and thinking, okay, what's going to happen next? These are very unsure times, and I'm not sure if I want to make an acquisition right now. Mm-hmm. Again, in the second half, as people realize and investors realize that things were here to stay, business picked up again, and you see the number of M&A transactions rise again in the third and the fourth quarter. And this was sparked by a few things. One is expansion. A lot of companies said it's actually a good time this moment to buy companies and to actually do acquisitions. Companies can be slightly cheaper just because of the pandemic. Some companies are looking for funding but having not the ability to fundraise, and those are great acquisition targets. So the end of 2020 was actually pretty robust for the technology ecosystem.
Mr. Lintz, I want to focus on something you actually said a while ago, that it's more difficult for firms to look for initial seed funding, but that actually it's actually picked up for existing firms to go from Series B to Series C funding, if I'm getting the parlance here correct, actually. Does that mean that when you talk to venture capitalists and possible investors in the startup space, that proof of concept actually matters right now? And does that mean that if there are people with startups out there, that they might find the going or the competition for financing a little bit harder, or it might be a little harder to coax funding from some of these venture capitalists or these possible investors in their tech space unless they have a proven concept? Is that am I on the right track there?
Yeah, that's a very good question, and you are definitely on the right track. You can say that there is more capital in the market than ever. There's more investors looking for amazing companies than ever. But on the other hand, there's also more founders that are building companies. So you'll see more competition at the early stage. The moment, let's say, you and I build an e-commerce company, there's 100 others building a similar e-commerce company as well. So that competition, that level of competition has definitely increased, which makes it more challenging to get sort of that first funding if you don't have some traction or some level of MVP to show to investors.
Right. Mr. Lentz, let me just take a sidestep, actually, from the study, because I do know that Golden Gate Ventures is an early-stage VC firm focused in Southeast Asia, and we just talked about it, that usually early-stage financing might be a little bit more challenging compared to Series B and Series C. So for anybody who's listening out there who might be a tech startup, actually, just from Golden Gate Ventures' point of view, what do you guys look for, and what might actually convince you in a founder's business plan that might say, maybe we can take a chance on this guy for early seed funding? Would you care to share with us what you look for?
Of course. One of the most important things as a fund being in Southeast Asia is that the companies that operate and the companies that we're looking for are trying to focus on something that is a local or a regional challenge. Typically, when companies are competing for investment dollars, we want them to solve something that is part of local infrastructure. So you can, for instance, if you look at how payment gateways have evolved over time, they addressed local needs. They addressed bank-to-bank transfers in countries like Indonesia and Vietnam. They addressed cash on delivery for e-commerce companies. And then if you look at marketplaces could become very, very localized. So we tend to look for companies that solve a local issue, but out of that local issue could become a regional champion. And I think the second thing we're always looking for is founders that are hyper-focused on execution, on really honing down on solving this problem and executing it tirelessly. Those are two important issues when it comes to early stage funding for us.
Interesting. We're speaking to Michael Lentz, a partner at Golden Gates Ventures here on Across the ASEAN, to talk about the firm's exit landscape for Southeast Asia, the second version, that is, of their report. Here's something I noticed, and going back to the report, Mr. Lentz, what's notable is that last year you also pointed out that about 50% of all funding was done by three firms. Two were from one particular country, Indonesia. We talk about Gojek and Tokopedia, for instance, and of course, Singapore's Grab. In fact, when you look at the unicorn space in Southeast Asia, there seems to be a high concentration in these two countries in the region that couldn't be more different from each other in terms of demographic profile, development. What's so unique about both Singapore and Indonesia in terms of startup and unicorn cultivation? And how do we reconcile these two very different countries that are being very successful in cultivating an environment to build unicorns and perhaps cultivate these huge tech startups?
Yeah, I'd say if you look at the position of Singapore in the Southeast Asian ecosystem, it is a natural magnet for talent. So you'll see that a lot of companies would have either their holding in Singapore or their major port of operations in Singapore, although they might even look at expanding their business into Indonesia or into Vietnam or into Malaysia. So Singapore is a very important hub. Most of the major funds are in Singapore, on the early stage side as on the later stage side. There's a lot of infrastructure in place when it comes to housing for startups, when it comes to funding for startups, when it comes to incubators. So Singapore is a natural hub, which makes it natural for founders to at least have a part of their operation in Singapore. And it's extremely helpful when it comes to fundraising. Now, Indonesia is, as you could say, almost an entire investment thesis on its own, just because of the demographics, how big the country is, how tech savvy and how ripe for technology the consumers are. It's the biggest market in the region, so naturally, a lot of companies that are founded in Indonesia attract a lot of attention from investors. So those two markets take the majority of the dollars for this reason.
All right. Mr. Lentz, let's talk exit strategies once again. And as was noted in the report, that many founders still favor M&A activities as a possible exit strategy. But recently, there's been a notable rise, at least in popularity, for using the SPAC vehicle, listing out in the U.S. using special purpose acquisition companies. We are talking to someone later on more in depth about Grab's planned listing in the U.S. via SPACs. But let's just focus on the vehicle itself and the recent popularity of this as it is. Could this give startups more reason to favor the public markets route out in the United States? But more importantly also, are there any possible pitfalls that need to be guarded against should the SPACs become a thing because of how quickly firms can actually realize fundraising, a possible exit strategy using this particular vehicle?
Yeah, I think the biggest question that founders and CEOs should ask themselves is, are we ready to become a public company? And it doesn't matter if you take the SPAC route or direct listing or the traditional IPO route. You know, as a company, the first question you ask is, you know, am I ready to be a public company? There are a number of advantages of being a public company. I think one is if you are looking to, for instance, look at doing larger acquisitions, raising capital, and whether it's equity or debt to the public markets, it's going to be, should be easier at least. And you should have a wider pool of investors to work with. And so I think that is one. Two is when you look at, you know, potential partnerships, potential expansion, when you look at working with institutional capital, you know, the public markets are poised for these types of assets. Now, the thing is with SPACs, what has become interesting is SPACs have kind of created a spotlight on Southeast Asia. Because we had a number of companies that were, you know, either considering or are close to de-SPACing, institutional investors, whether it's in the U.S. or in Asia, have shown a spotlight on Southeast Asia, which means that companies that are looking to list over the next, 1 to 2 years will have a welcome, investor base, you know, either in the U.S. or potentially here in Singapore down the line as well.
Mm-hmm. Finally, Mr. Linz, before we let you go, I do want to ask you to comment on rising yields. As we know, the Federal Reserve is set to make their decision tomorrow morning. But as we've noticed, rising yields recently and yield pressures have called valuations in the tech space under question. I'm sure this is something you've also noticed given Golden Gate Ventures' involvement, at least in the tech and startup industry in Southeast Asia. If yields continue to rise in the global environment, how might this shape actually the ASEAN tech landscape in particular? Or do you think that this will barely cause any tremors for the specific ASEAN tech space?
So I think specifically for ASEAN, it won't have a major influence, and I think for two reasons. So one is if you look at public markets, I think it's going to affect public markets, but the majority of the exits will still be driven by mergers and acquisitions, and not so much by public listings. So I think that's one. The second thing, and this is an interesting point. Over the last few years, a number of funds that are Southeast Asian based have been able to raise a new fund, which means for them that they're going to deploy these funds over the next 5 to 6 years. So I foresee that the same pace of investments, even looking at the first quarter of this year, will actually be record on record. So I don't think that rising yields will have a direct effect on the Southeast Asian venture landscape. I only think that for companies that are going to list, they might take a pause or they might reconsider in terms of timing. But otherwise, I don't see a big effect on Southeast Asia itself.
All right, that was Michael Linz, partner at Golden Gates Ventures, talking about the firm's recent Southeast Asia Exit Landscape 2.0 report here and across the ASEAN, going in depth into what the future, what the landscape is for Southeast Asia's tech space and how it has been impacted by recent events. Mr. Linz, thank you so much for joining us today. And as always, I wish you and your loved ones continued health and safety during these uncertain times. We look forward to the next time you can join the show. Meanwhile, happy Wednesday, sir, and appreciate the time.
Thank you so much. Stay safe.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.